Good, and thank you all for taking your time and being here today. We'll first move with public comments. Those should be on any items on the scheduled agenda or items that are not on the agenda, limited to 3 minutes. If anyone would like to talk, please just stand, state your name, and take your testimony. So please, anybody want to start? Yes, Sue McLeod.
My social security number is...
I hate those CIA folks.
The question I had, I actually sent an email to Chuck about it, and that is, as you get into the governance committee, maybe you need some sort of a protocol of how what's going to go to the TAC and what isn't, because from my experience, there's no way some of these things that have a technical aspect of them can go to the TAC and still come to the governance committee and meet the timelines that I think you're going to set. So how do you define, I mean, there are things on here that technically I would think, you know, the TAC might weigh in on, but so there needs to be defined probably from the beginning somewhere.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak? Seeing none, we'll close the public portion of the meeting. And before we get to the regular agenda, first thing would be is there's a change in the agenda. Item number 3 has been agreed upon to remove from the agenda. If that's okay with everyone, we'll dispense with item number 3,
and then we'll move to next. And I'll note that is on the Water Authority's agenda tomorrow night. We decided that was the proper venue for it, so
perfect.
We're not skipping it. We're just going to be working on that tomorrow night.
Okay, no problem. Now we'll move to item number 1, election of Governance Committee Chair and Vice Chair. So... There are 3 of us potentially eligible, and I'm only semi-eligible until Monday.
I have no interest in either position. So thanks for your leadership.
In that case,
may I make a motion that we elect Jason chair?
So that good.
Love it. All in favor say aye.
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 So I keep following
Bob.
Bob
is vice chair.
Bob is vice chair. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. I turn the meeting over to the chair.
Excellent. Okay. We will move on to the first substantive item, which is the design build request for qualifications. And this is under the governance agreement and is an opportunity for a general discussion this afternoon. There's a 2-page outline that CalAM has provided, so I think it's an opportunity for us to provide comments on that outline, and then a more fully developed RFQ will be brought to the Governance Committee for next week's meeting, is my understanding. Rob, if there's any correction to that, please let me know, but I'll turn it to you, Rob, or to whoever wants to go through the draft that you have provided for our comment.
Okay, well, maybe just to open, we're in the midst of developing the criteria for the request for qualifications for the design builder. That's the entity that will design and construct the desalination plant. As Mayor Burnett indicated, we intend to finalize the scope of that in the next week or so. We want to put it out for bid, I believe, on April 1st. And so I think I'll turn it over to Rich Svenland, our Director of Engineering. He's going to take you through the specifics and give a little bit more detail on what we're thinking in terms of the formulation of the RFQ.
Actually, one other item just in terms of laying the groundwork. This is under Category B of the governance agreement. So just as a reminder for everyone, this is the category where the governance committee can provide recommendations. Thank you, Jane. And should CalAM choose not to follow those recommendations, that CalAM is to provide a written explanation within a short period of time for doing so. Just so setting the context in which we're having this discussion. So,
and specifically, and
it's category B1.
This is B1.
Right. Rich.
Where do you want me to stand here?
Wherever you're most comfortable. We are recording it, and Arlene has offered to send the Water Authority the audio file, so we'll put it up on our website, the audio file. But guess the only check would be to make sure that we can hear you, Rich. So I'll defer to you to, if we are.
Is that all right, just stand over here?
I'm sure that we can hear them.
Okay.
I don't, it should be fine. It should be fine.
Thank you.
Okay, so we submitted an outline of the general format of the RFQ. This is a big project, you know, $70 to $100 million is the estimated value of the DSouth plant component itself. And so before you is kind of a, we have six sections. I'll run through those sections real quick, and then we'll get into the meat of the selection criteria and qualifications that we're looking for input on, just to make sure we've covered that. So section one will be an introduction, standard to all RFQs, what are they bidding on, why, what's the history of the project, what's the importance of the times of the timelines while we're doing this. Section two is a regulated utility. We have minority business requirements with the Public Utilities Commission, and so we intend to put that goal in the RFP, and want everyone to know what those are. So there'll be a brief write-up on what those are. It's 21.6%. As a company, we've met that a couple years in a row now, which we're very proud of. Section three is a project overview. So a lot of the stuff we've done in testimony, it's already part of the record for the project, but we'll get into the details of what we're looking for. Section four is the schedule summary. So we're going to lay out all the dates, not only the dates for the RFQ, but the dates for the RFP, and then the dates for the project in general. That'll be in section four. And so really what we want to talk about today is section five, which is the qualifications. And so at the bottom of this outline, we've listed what we think are the key important ingredients that a design builder should have to deliver this project. And I'll run through those pretty quick, and then we can talk about if we need to add some or delete some. Okay, so experience, first part is team. We want to see the organizational structure of the team. We want to know if they're led by a contractor or are they led by an engineering firm. Are they a joint venture? We want to know all the specifics of how their team is formulated. We want resumes of the key personnel. We all know in this business, company names are important, but also to the people that end up delivering their job, that's the most important, and we know that. So we want to know which staff they're going to dedicate to this project. Under experience, we want to know what desal experience we have. And this one's actually pretty tough because how many desal plants in the United States are there right now that are big? There's one, right? Tampa Bay. So you can't just base this experience on desal experience. We have Sand City, so there's another one. There's two, but that's 300 acre feet. Our plant's 30 times larger than that. So we need to have some desal experience in there. One of the things we're wrestling with is, do we include international experience? Do we include Israeli experience, Saudi Arabia experience, Australian experience? We think yes, but you know, something we want some input on. If we don't have desal experience, what's the next level? You know, water treatment plant experience. Tell us what you've done water treatment plant wise. There's a lot of good constructors in California. There's a lot of water plants in California, so we want to see what experience they have with that. Specifically, we want to know what California water treatment plant experience you have. What brackish or membrane experience do you have? So, you know, reverse osmosis, which is what's needed for this plant, is the most complex of the membrane processes. But there are some other membrane processes out there. So if those firms have experience with that, we want to hear about that. We want to know what water treatment plant projects they have of, you know, comparable size and cost. Because it's one thing to do a 10 MGD plant, it's another one to do a 10 MGD plant that's $300 million. Okay. Experience in meeting owner's deadlines for project substantial completion and acceptance testing. So we want to know, have you been on tight timelines before? Have you met those timelines? Okay, we all know the cease and desist order dates out there, so we're trying to see what these firms can do as far as meeting timelines. We want to know any projects where they've had to pay performance penalties. A lot of projects have liquidated damages that you assess if they're late. We want to know if they've had to do that. Sometimes, believe it or not, it's cheaper for them to pay the LDs because they know they couldn't get it, so they budget that into their project. We don't want that. that's not something we're interested in, but so we want to know if they've done that in the past. Certainly, permitting is a very important aspect of this. Last count, there's possibly 26 different permits needed for all the projects by various local, state, and federal agencies. Okay, so we need to know what their team's experience is in dealing with some of those. And some of the key we put down is certainly we want to know California-specific permitting because what they do in Texas doesn't matter to me. Certainly California coastal experience is a key one for us here. And then whatever local permitting conditions they, you know, if you work with the county, you go through the county permitting process, and that's a plus. We wanted the design build team experience both individually and independently. Sorry, that's the same thing. Independently and working together. So a lot of times teams will team up for the first time on our project. We want to know if it's their first time teaming up. Or if it's a team that's done this before in the past, we want to know that they've done this before in the past and show us the experience where they've worked together in the past. One of the important parts of this project is the quality of the water coming out of the plant. It needs to match very closely to Carmel River quality in order to reduce problems in the system. So we want to know what experience they have designing the post-treatment of the plant and how they're able to show success in that area. We want to know what their SCADA and their control experiences are. So these are reverse osmosis plants are pretty complicated. They're not manually operated. They're operated by a lot of computers. We want to know what their capability is to design those systems. We want to know their experience in meeting plant performance criteria. So there's cost per million gallons or cost per million gallons of power, cost per million gallons of chemicals, different loading rates on different components. We want to know how they've handled those things in the past. We haven't finalized our decision on LEED efforts yet because some LEED is very expensive and that may not be appropriate, but we want to know what LEED experience they do have because I think there will be a decision further down the road what kind of where we want to go with LEED certification. And closely coupled with LEED is the sustainable architectural design features. So if they've done anything in that area, we wanted to know about it. A good example is the road on Charlie Benton Road. If you drive out there, you see a sign, this road was built with recycled tires. Okay, so that's sustainable design. So we want to see similar things out there like that. And of course, we need references for all this stuff. Everything they've done, we were going to check references. That's the standard operating procedure when you want to validate what they've said. You call the owners and say, hey, did these guys really deliver what they said? Because that's the experience we're looking for. I guess I'll ask if there's any comments on things that you think we've missed, we need to add.
It's a small enough group that I'll go ahead and take any questions from the public as well, please.
Rich, I see you listed under permitting, you've got California Coastal Commission, local. Aren't you going to have some federal permits as well?
There are. We just started this as a starting point. We'll have a more specific list of the permits. Like I said, I think there's 26 right now that I've kind of been keeping tabs of. So
that list is going to go in, you know, here's your list of permits. Do you have experience with all of them? And then second, on what experience you're going to look for as far as the locale in the world, maybe what makes sense is, I don't know, I'm pretty sure there's different water qualities like in the Middle Eastern plants than there are here on the West Coast. And maybe it's you look at the similar water quality where people are putting plants with similar water quality.
Right, that's good feedback. Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. I mean, even in the U.S., we have plants that make non-potable water. And there are reverse osmosis plants making non-potable water. That we don't care about that. That's not important to us. So you'll see this a lot of experience. They'll say, yeah, I make a desal plant for an oil rig out in the Gulf of Mexico. That doesn't pertain to what we're doing here.
Bill.
Yes, thank you. Bill Reichsmith, I'm the executive director of the Regional Water Authority, and I'm speaking a little bit out of turn here. This item is on my own board's agenda tomorrow evening. So some things I would encourage, I don't know if you've actually finished all that list. You're about two-thirds of the way
through. I was just on the experience part only, so I still have some other things.
To cover?
Yes.
Okay, then I'll stand back then when you finish. What I have to say isn't exactly on the point of experience. It's on who we want to qualify for this.
Okay.
Other questions or comments for Rich on the experience section?
Well, I'd just comment that the resume of key personnel is important to me. I think it ferrets out the possibility of any existing or potential conflicts that might be there. And then as far as desal experience, I do think that Larry's comment's a good one, but that it is almost essential that be considered seriously. And then as far as experience with permitting, the unique nature of permitting in California is always a challenge, let alone and I don't know if it's a plus or a minus having had local permitting experience. I think it's more of that falls into the head, you know, heads up and better be familiar with how protracted the process can be given the nature of public concern. So.
Okay. Don?
Just, I'm not sure they fit here, and I'm not in construction, so I really don't know. But the question would be for me is number of like change orders in projects, because people can bid with the understanding that they're going to be putting in a lot of change orders later to make up. And then the second thing would be responsiveness after the project's complete to correct deficiencies or problems.
Good. And that, yeah, that's actually one of the ploys of certain firms is to come in low knowing that they could change order of hire. And we're very cognizant of that, and we try to avoid that. We don't like the surprises either.
And Rich, can you describe the parts of the overall project that will be covered by this? So it's the desalination facility, but it doesn't include the pipe or bidding.
Yeah.
Okay, where are you drawing the
so boundaries? This RFQ is for, the easiest way to describe it is everything inside the fence on the desal plant site on Charlie Benson Road.
Okay.
And that's going to be design build. And there's one little caveat to that. The intake system, which is, you know, comprised of the slant wells on the Cemex property, pipelines coming under the dunes, there will be a pump station on the land side of the dunes. That pump station, or the, I'm going to say the can, if you will, or the well, will be part of the contractor building the intake system, but the equipping of that pump station with pumps and motors and a building, if needed, would fall under the same
okay.
design builder, because we want them to be coordinated. One of the things we're looking at is, and we have to look at the economics when we get to that point, but they're about 8,000 feet apart, the desal plant and this pump station. But to get the best benefit from a power perspective, it'd be nice to have the power come from the plant down to feed the water pump station. Okay, because then that's another 1,000 horsepower that we can lump into our big pot of power. So it makes sense if those are all coordinated, especially from a power feed perspective, that same contractor is building those facilities. Okay, so basically it's everything inside the fence. So that would be, you know, the pre-treatment needed, the reverse osmosis treatment needed, the post-treatment, the high service pump station, which is the pump station that pumps the water to town, all the pipes inside the plant, you know, generators, clear wells, which is the finished water storage tank. And that's it for that.
Thank you. Bill?
I think based on that question that I would like to just jump in here, because my suggestion had to do with size, if you will. The bigger you make your part of the project, the less there is a local ability to be a bidder. So as part of your solicitation, I would recommend that there be a requirement to list the subs and the sub-consultants, sub-contractors. And I don't know if you can do such a thing, but a local hire requirement for employees, if you will, for workers. My guess is if you do end up with state and federal funding, you will have a stipulation in there for prevailing wages or Davis Bacon wages, one or the other, if not both. But the local hire requirement is important as well. In other words, the idea would be to keep the money local with local subs and material suppliers and so on to the extent practicable. So that would be kind of an important issue, and it'd be nice to kind of work that in, because you're also looking at a very large project for which there may be even no local vendor, especially if you consider the pumps on the beach as part of the overall thing. Now, there will be other work, pipelines and the like, for which, you know, lots of local folks that do pipelines, but the major project itself is of concern in a sense of local hire for employees, consultants, and contractors.
Richard, will there be a minimum number of folks that you seek that have this experience? In other words, if there's one in the United States, would it be a bid to one? And you'd look outside the United States, or is, you know, are you looking for 5 or 10 as a minimum to send this?
The goal of this RFQ process is to find four firms. Capable of bidding the project for us.
Okay.
We are actively talking to about 8 firms right now, so there's definitely interest.
Okay.
And as a side, Marina Coast put out on the street back in October a RFP for a 3,000-acre for desal plant. They got 6 submittals. So that's a good sign. I mean, that means that there's definitely interest from the contracting world to bid on this kind of work. We think 4 is the right number. Ultimately, we want 3 bids. We want 3 hard numbers. Mm-hmm. And so the 4th is kind of that insurance policy that if one backs out, because sometimes there are conditions that happen that they don't like that they want to back out. As an example, San Clemente Dam, we shortlisted. We had 8 proposals come in. We shortlisted the 4. All 4 did bid it in the end, which was great for us because that's the best of all worlds when you can have, you know, 4 to evaluate.
Great.
Yes, Larry.
Yeah, this is Larry Hampson. So my understanding on public contracting is that if there's a public contribution to a project, it has to be bid and you have to accept the low bidder. Now, in your San Clemente project, you've got public funding in it, but you were able to go to a design build process, and I guess you selected who you wanted, and you didn't have to take the low bid. Is that correct?
So there's some terms in there that are defined, and the attorneys helped us out with. It's the best value proposal. And so best value doesn't always mean low cost, because there's other issues. And we would be following a similar format here. The classic example is, what if one guy says, I can do the membranes for $50 million, but your operating cost is 3 times higher? Yeah. We need to be able to evaluate that. So we may pay more in capital up front, but the operating cost is so much less that the life cycle cost, it's advantageous to take a different one. So we're going to be looking for, and those are the terms that we'll be working in the RFP, is the best value proposal, not the lowest
cost. So that's
cost.
How you're meeting the requirement,
yes.
Under the public contract.
You talked about how you're going to ask them to list any performance penalties and any liquidated damages. It might also be helpful to ask if there's been any environmental issues with previous projects, given this community's general concern with our environment, that we would want to have a firm that has a good track record there. Other questions, which is still just on the experience portion, but other questions on that?
I just, to Larry's point, I'd just like to say, I'm not sure we're subject to the public contracting requirements, so I think the process that Rich described is accurate, but I wouldn't want to leave you with the fact that we're subject to that particular requirement. We're not a public agency, so maybe Anthony can answer the specifics of how San Clemente Dam was put together based on the contribution from the state and federal sources, but I'm not sure that we are, you know, necessarily following all those requirements. I don't know, Anthony, if you want to.
Yeah, I'll just say that in San Clemente Dam, we were not subject to public contracting code requirements. This was determined by the Coastal Conservancy, the other entities who gave us the grant money. And they basically came back and said, no, you know, they agreed with us that we're not subject to it. There was no requirement. We did conduct a competitive procurement, as Rich described, you know, in the spirit of the competitive bidding laws that are exceptions to the public contracting code that allow competition on value, not full price. So we followed the spirit of the law. Government code, I think 5956 is the exception in the state law that allows for other than low bid price competition. We followed that in spirit, but it was not a formal requirement of us since we're not a public entity.
Which I would just comment, I think I've had too many experiences over the years of going with the lowest bid and ending up with a very combative project. Quality has been questionable. And it does not guarantee you a quality product just because you got the lowest competitive bid.
Rich, do you want to keep on going through the?
Yes. So I have four more areas of experience, qualifications. So the next is project history. We touched a little bit on this on their experience side, but we also want to know the litigation history on their projects. How many times have they been sued by whoever? That's very important to us. We want to know what projects they had that were found to be in default. That's very important to us. We don't want a contractor going bankrupt in the middle of this thing. That has happened. I mean, it does happen. So we've, and then any notice of default on any of the products, we want them to list all that. And this is pretty standard stuff. We're not asking for anything out of the ordinary here. All these firms go through the same process. Nobody wants to enter into an agreement with a firm that has a checkered past. And the firms that we're talking to, for best of my knowledge, there's no checkered past that I can tell. I mean, these are all reputable firms that do this all over the country, and specifically in California. Okay. So the next area is financial. So and this is it is a large contract. So the company that we would enter into agreement with would need to be able to show us that they have the financial wherewithal to make this thing happen. So we're going to ask for, first off, what's their organizational structure? So if it's a joint venture, you know, companies do that to help shed liability in case something happens. Well, what's the balance sheet that's protecting that joint venture? We need to know those arrangements to make sure we have something to fall back onto. We certainly need to know the financial ability of the firm, the bonding capacity, how much of this project ties up their bonding capacity. You find sometimes that some firms will stretch their limit, and this could be their single largest project, and so that's got pluses and minuses. Pluses, they focus on it. Minuses are, if they have issues, then they're done. So we want to kind of get a feel for where they are. We want to know about their, parental guarantee, meaning, that depending on what kind of organizational structure they have, who's the entity that's guaranteeing the project. We typically ask for audited financial statements. And typically this is an issue because you don't usually get the most current year because the auditing didn't happen until. But hopefully this being in April, we'd be close, but maybe not. So maybe we'd only be getting 2011 audited financials, but we at least try to get the most current audited financials that they have. And we want evidence of their balance sheet strength. This is an important project. We want to make sure that the contractor has the financial wherewithal to make it happen. So the next topic we have is diversity. And remember, we talked about earlier, we are a PC regulated utility. We have a diverse goal requirement of 21.6%. We want to see how those firms could help us meet that number. Whatever we don't meet on this project, we have to try to meet on other projects throughout California, so we need to kind of have a feel for that. If they can only do 5%, that's a huge burden to overcome on other projects. But if they can do 30%, that's good. And our experience on diverse to spend, just to throw it out there, is this doesn't mean the project costs more. We've been able to show on some of our other projects that the cost can come in cheap or less expensive using diverse firms. And the case in point is on the San Clemente project. We gave some of our diverse vendors to the local guys bidding on this and said, use these guys. And they did, and their work was cheaper than they could have done it in-house. So that's a win-win. We get diverse spend dollars, and a diverse guy gets the work, and it ends up costing less. So we'll do the same thing. We have a person within our company that helps find diverse vendors. We connect them with our contractors bidding on it. Hopefully they see a little marriage there and they can bid on the work. So we are going to be asking for, hey, how can you help us meet this 21.6% goal? Now, one of the questions we still haven't worked out is this a mandatory goal that they meet 21.6 or not? We typically say it's not mandatory because we don't want the price to skyrocket up, but we want to know what their plans are to help meet that goal. It'd be good to have some conversation on that today if you're interested in talking about that. And actually would also, if this local goal requirement, same thing, is that a goal or a non-mandatory goal, or should it be something that's locked down? There's pluses and minuses to doing it that way. Bottom line, we don't want the cost to go up, so we have to make decisions here that make the cost as low as possible. And then the last general topic we have is safety. Safety is the most important part of any project. We want all the folks working on this to come home the same way they showed up, which is, all the body parts, all the fingers, all the toes. Okay, so we want another safety record. And there are contractors who have horrible safety records. It doesn't do anyone any good to hire a contractor with a poor safety record, and they have, fatalities on the project too. That causes a lot of other issues as well. So we look at that. Okay, so that's pretty much it for what we think are the minimum requirements that in this RFQ process the contractors would be telling us, and certainly open up to more. But then the next thing I have left is how we would weight these or select these or to have general discussion about that.
Right. Questions for Rich or comments on these the project history, financial, diversity, and safety headings?
Is there some insurance category where you'll have expectations on them as far as
you know, performance, errors and omissions, that kind of stuff?
Yes. So American insurance is pretty high. It's something we kind of struggle with on some of our real small contractors. But the truth is it's high because we believe it protects everybody in the end. And so we will have insurance requirements that will be made part of the RFP. It's not the RFQ yet because of, you know, we'll have to custom tailor. But most of the firms bidding on this kind of know what our insurance requirements will be. And you're right, there's errors and omissions for the design side of it. There's also general liability. There's all the statutory requirements for workers' comp and general automotive and all that stuff. But there will be a builder's risk type of policy that we have to look at. And generally, it's going to be the value of the contract. We'll have insurance coverage for that.
So the errors and omissions piece is just a bunch of finger pointing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, well, you made the mistake. No, you made the mistake, but I'm insured to get covered. And then you're going to have a penalty clause, but are you going to have a performance incentive where if I get done quicker, I get paid more? It's usually the reverse of a penalty clause.
We typically have not done that, but we would be, I guess, open to that if that's something the group would want to consider.
December 2016 sounds good.
Yeah. Give or take a day.
Jeannie. Actually, it was the same question, but I was thinking in terms of your list of qualifications, under the liquidated damages, you should also ask them if they've received any early completion bonuses.
Okay. Yeah, every contracting entity has a different philosophy on how that's done, and mm-hmm. Caltrans does that a lot for their projects. Mm-hmm. And certainly it's something that could be decided on here. We typically haven't put it in there because we just drive them hard to get done, and then we don't have to pay out any money. But you're right, there's different ways of, mm-hmm. certainly the scheduling deadline on this one's a little unique.
Well, I guess from my perspective, we can ask for their experience with these kinds of things now, but we don't have to decide now if that's what we want in this procurement. We can decide that later. The RFP, Rich, is scheduled to come out when?
We'd like to issue that June 15th.
So that's kind of the time. We have that much time to figure all this out.
Oh, you're right. It's an RFQ. I mean, yeah. I understand. I'm just trying to get a feel for the flavor of where we're going.
Yeah.
So the RFQ will be issued April 1st. How much time?
30 days.
Okay.
Basically, May 1st, they would submit their statement of qualifications. We would be reviewing those, potentially interviews. Sometimes it's real easy. To, you know, all we got to do is, potentially there's 8 people out there, you cut the field in half.
Right.
And that can be done real easy sometimes. Other times, there could be the 4th or 5th that are really on the bubble, and we may have to interview folks.
Right.
So we've allowed enough time to interview if we need to, but by June 15th, we would be issuing the RFP to those 4 shortlisted firms.
So it's by that point that that's your observation?
Probably
by
before that,
point,
we need to. You have to have it done. Yeah. And we'll be coming back here to talk to you about that document as well in advance.
Yeah, okay. And that would probably be a long meeting because that document's going to be pretty thick.
All right, other Larry.
Yeah. Larry Hanson again. I like the idea of an incentive to get done, but I'm thinking we've got an experimental slant well technology that hasn't been proven on this kind of scale, and we have a plant that's going to be one of the largest on the West Coast, maybe 6 or 10 million gallons. Pushing the schedule to try to cut it short, and it may not be the, in the long run, the best for the project.
Fair points.
Yeah, go.
Now, Rich, I would point out that this is the request for qualifications, not the request for proposals. So it doesn't have to be near so long. If you're worried about reading encyclopedias, and you'll get a lot of superfluous stuff in there. I would limit the number of pages that you would expect to what you really want to read. Okay, and and I appreciated Supervisor Potter's comment about design build, because the E&O and issue in a design build environment kind of goes away. If there's an issue under construction that was an engineering design, okay, company, fix it. You engineered it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So do it on your nickel. And so that's one of the real blessings of design build. Most public agencies are required under the public contract law to use design bid build and then litigate.
Right.
And you sort out an awful lot of that in design build. That's an advantage CalM would have over a public agency.
Other comments for Rich on this section? Otherwise, we'll turn to the selection criteria. So we've laid out all of these criteria. How are you going to evaluate them?
Right. So we want to propose how we think it should lay out. And then when you see the draft RFQ, you'll kind of see how we propose it, if that makes sense. But the idea is that there are certain categories that we believe are more pass-fail. And maybe pass-fail is not the right word, but the idea is you either did it or you didn't do it. And then, you know, for instance, safety. They either have a safety record below a certain industry standard, pass or fail, right? Do we need to see a whole write-up on their whole safety and stuff? I mean, it's something we want to decide. So we'll propose certain pass-fail items, if that makes sense. And then other items we're going to score. So it's going to be a weighting system, a scoring system, and then a weighting system. And then so we'd like to, when we have the draft RFQ, you'll see how we proposed weighting those items. And then if that makes sense, we can tweak those back and forth. Remember, there's no cost here yet. This is just qualification-based. So it's going to be all technical scoring. But what's the percentage difference between safety versus experience? I mean, experience should be way higher than safety, but safety still needs to be a part of it, right? So diversity, do we have any weighting on diversity? Maybe not. We want to know what they're going to do, but we may not weight it any. So that's what we want to propose. That's this. So it's a pass-fail system for certain things and then a weighting and scoring for the rest. Just wanted to see if that's kind of in general.
And when you come back, let's see, it's a week from today, you'll have a draft framework for our consideration at that point.
Yes.
Good. Yeah, Sue.
Who's the we? How is it on the CalM side? How do you vet the applications and what you'll get, which I'm sure is volumes?
Oh, so who on our team will either pick the weighting or review the weighting? I'm confused on that.
I assume these are coming to CalM, the application.
Yes. Yeah.
So how do you vet it at your end? Are you going to come down and make a recommendation of one individual company?
Well, we're going to shortlist to four.
And then that will be decided by the governance committee?
Well, I don't know that part of the rule. I think we tell you how we did it, and then present to you how we shortlisted to the four, and present you the backup of how we got to that shortlisting. And then I guess there'd be discussion if that was.
And how do you get from the four to the one?
Well, that's in the RFP process, and so that's going to be a whole other meeting, a whole other.
I just didn't know if we should bring in dartboards or.
When we get to the RFP, we will have consultants also helping us evaluate the RFPs because it can get pretty technical on the power thing and the different metrics and make sure we're not getting apples and oranges confused. So we'll have different recommendations from consultants on the way they read certain parts of their proposal, and then that'll help us determine a score for that area. And then that'll all feed into a master matrix.
And ultimately, does this one selection go to your board?
Yes, ultimately it will go to our board, yes.
The category B2 speaks to this a bit in the governance agreement, and it reads, I'll summarize it, but prior to the execution of any contract, category B2 speaks to the process that CalM was to go through and work with the governance committee in awarding a contract. So, in summary, it's that CalM would bring its proposal to the governance committee, and because it is under category B, seeks the governance committee's recommendation, but not be bound by that recommendation. I'm not sure whether the RFQ, it's not specifically called out, but.
It's not a contract at that point, so.
Okay.
So that's generally it for our proposed outline.
Great.
You'll see a draft from us very shortly, and then we'll talk about it next week.
And getting to a question that Sue asked at the outset, this is on the Water Authority's agenda for tomorrow night. We have not set the tax agenda for Monday, but we certainly will consider having it in the tax agenda, and all that information will then be useful to me representing the Water Authority at next Wednesday's meeting, where we'll be reviewing the full item. And this being the first one, and this happened quickly because we just signed this agreement a week ago. Going forward, we hope and expect there will be more lead time and allowing more ability to reach out to our TAC and other advisors. Any other comments for Rich on this? Do you?
I'm good.
You good? Okay. Any other comments from any member of the public? Okay, we will thank you very much, Rich, and we look forward to getting into more detail on this on next Wednesday. And in terms of the questions that were raised, fairly straightforward. Yeah. I took notes, but I'm happy to share with you, Rob, if you want. Item 3 has been pulled, as was noted earlier. Item 4 is discuss process and timeline for parties agreeing to criteria for the GWR recommendation as described in Category A1 of the governance agreement. And just as a review for everyone, the Category A is the category where the governance committee makes the decision as opposed to makes a recommendation. And a very significant one of the four decisions under Category A is the what I refer to as the go, no-go decision on GWR. And in that, in the agreement, we note that the parties, being the county, the Water Management District, the Water Authority, and Cal-Am, will establish criteria for making that decision and in advance, and those criteria will be mutually agreed to by the parties. So we're not planning on needing to make that decision for, in fact, quite a period of time. I think the current estimate is of 2.5 years. It would be 2015, late summer or fall of 2015. But I think that there is a desire to establish those criteria early on in the process, so the Water Management District and the Pollution Control Agency that are working on the GWR project will have clear milestones and objectives that they are working to hit, so that this go-no-go decision is not seen as a stop sign at some future point down the road, but in fact is something that if they meet these criteria, they will know that they will get the go-ahead to build that project. So recognizing that it's not the four of us to make the decision of what these criteria are, but rather the parties, which is the agencies that we represent. But recognizing that there's a need to align so that we all are coming together and agreeing on these criteria at the same time, we thought that it would be appropriate to initiate the discussion here about what is the process and what is the timeline for establishing those criteria. And I will just start out by saying we have put this on the Technical Advisory Committee's agenda for the Water Authority, and so we've had an initial discussion of those criteria, and I don't see Dave or Keith to maybe...
Dave is on an airplane.
Yeah, right. So I might... It may take me a second to pull up the list that we had. But the basic question for the governance committee is, what is the general process and timeline we want for establishing these criteria?
I think it's a little early for either timeline to at this particular point. We're still all gathering data, and I think it's really premature to say we can even engage in timeline discussion at this early stage. And we would just put the components after a long period of time together with respect to this. I think we need some more time before we can from the water management's perspective, come up with what that suggested timeline should be.
I don't think I was clear in terms of what timeline we're referring to. It's not the timeline for making the decision.
No, we know where that is.
That is going to be, that's going to be a moving target depending on the progress that the desal facility.
It's all the components we need is what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But you're saying that it would be premature to lock that in, the lock in those criteria at this.
Yeah. In at this point. In my discussions with Dave Stoll earlier today. That's exactly where we feel we need a little more time before we can exactly give you what that timeline of the various items should be, unless you're prepared to add something to it at this point that we're not aware of.
Well, the only thing I'll add is I know there was some discussion at the Public Utilities Commission inside the process about a workshop, mm-hmm. and I believe we supported that. I believe the authority supported the concept of a workshop. I know that some of the stakeholders were generally concerned about the lack of specificity that currently exists. And if you recall, we signed an MOU way back when between Cal-Am, the Water Management District, the Pollution Control Authority, and that MOU said, we're gonna look at this groundwater replenishment, we need to develop these criteria. We actually set a date, which has long since passed, to develop those criteria. And I think there is some nervousness in the community that we'd like to understand a little bit more how this decision is going to get made before we go too far down the road. So right now might not be the right time, but my sense would be that it would help us at the Public Utilities Commission if there was a little more meat on the bones here so that at least there would be.
Are you suggesting reactivating the workshop concept then?
I think it's a possibility. I'm trying to recall. I think that the workshop idea is out there, and the commission has made no determination on whether they would like to have it or not.
Maybe I can embellish here a little bit. We just got PCA approval to joint to go forward.
Right.
Okay, and now we've established at least six pieces of criteria that need to be looked at. And I can go over those and just for clarification, which is complete and certify the EIR for the groundwater replenishment at the CEQA Plus level. So that needs to get done. Water rights secured for recommended project, that needs to get finalized. Public support from the following, obviously the Regional Water Authority and from the individual cities, from our own district, from Seaside Groundwater Basin Water Master Board, MRWPCA, we need letters of support and some public forums. Cost estimate for capital plus O&M cost and suggesting what the cost per acre foot would be. Time estimate for project startup, that it would be no later than January 1, 2017. So those are important things. And finally, number six, the permit status is consistent with the project schedule. So that's what we've identified at this point. But again, just having the approval to go forward with PCA, now all of a sudden we're spending money to get to this point. Yeah.
What, just one clarification, Ed, I know you were trying to read through it quickly, but on the fifth item, it's January 1st, 2017, or the then current desal project startup estimated date. We're trying
Correct.
To hold these both to the same standard, so if the desal project is slipping, that we don't want the GWR project to slip, but it, so long as it's on a faster track than desal, so long as it's, you know, even if it's after January 1st, 2017, then we'd still be okay with it. This is what is currently being talked about.
I didn't mean the second half of that sentence.
I just didn't want for others to miss that one.
So anyway, that's where we stand as a district at this particular point. Just so we don't have a timeline yet for this, but we could have one in, I'm thinking, relatively short order when we get these organized. Again, we're just going forward.
I think that the other PUC element is that Cal-Am is asking the PUC to make a decision that it's not accustomed to making, which is to give a large amount of discretion or a large decision to the local agencies as opposed to keeping it at the PUC level in terms of this bifurcated track of either it's a smaller desal plant with GWR or it's a larger desal plant without GWR. And I think to get the commission more comfortable with the being willing to, in essence, delegate that decision to the local community, being clear about what the criteria are before the PUC issues its decision and such that it can be incorporated into that decision-making process, I think will be quite helpful.
Two weeks ago, I was just in Washington for a water management district, and the deputy director of the EPA strongly suggests in the western part of the United States that groundwater replenishment be an absolute part of any water solution plan. So they're definitely leaning in that direction.
Want to take it out to the public, Janet?
Maybe this is a rhetorical question, but could MRWPCA move ahead without approval from the PUC on its project? And if that's the case, what's the likelihood of that occurring?
I think that Rob could probably speak to it, but I doubt that Cal-Am would enter into a water purchase agreement without the PUC authorizing it. So I think that would be the safe assumption. Crux of the issue.
I think that's a safe assessment. I mean, I think PCA, and I won't speak for them, but my sense is they are banking on us being able to execute an agreement that would pay for the water. So, and we need the commission to approve that. So in the absence of that, there's really no funding stream for the project. So the two really need to tie together. And if the commission So the commission needs to authorize in some way, shape, or form.
Through a rate.
Through some type of rate recovery.
Setting process.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And maybe further clarification, the district envisions this to be a public project, not owned by Cal-Am. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That the water management district actually takes possession of the water and sells it to Cal-Am. And obviously, the sale agreement finances the plant.
Other comments on this item? Seeing none, I will close the public comment period, and I will just add a couple. I did pull up the criteria that these came from Keith Israel and are just his suggestions, so I don't think it's a formal position from PCA, but noting we may want to include as one of the criteria receipt of state SRF loans, one, completion of preliminary design being two, three, project funding plan at an intermediate level, and I don't know what that means as a technical matter, but and four, the commitment to purchase water. So those would be four additional criteria that he's suggesting would be added to the six that Bob read through earlier. Want to circle back to the concept of a PUC workshop, because there's no reason for us to run a separate process from the PUC if they're going to be moving forward with that anyway. Does it make sense to this committee for the PUC to pursue that workshop, and should we encourage them or through our agencies encourage them to do so?
Seems like you guys would do.
They're only benefit by having more input.
I think so.
Okay.
What's your position on advocacy then?
I'll go ahead and George, even though I've closed the public comment, I'll reopen it.
Back to the subject. I just got off the conference call on scheduling evidentiary hearing, testimony schedule, and so on. There was some discussion about the settlement conference. It got some discussion, but no approval. But there was some criticism of scheduling the evidentiary hearings in such detail so early in the process that there are going to be a number of unanswered questions beyond that. This is what some of the participants were saying. I only say that to suggest that there probably will be support for a workshop based on those kind of discussions today.
Who was on the phone with you?
Almost all the interviewers, about 15, 16 people.
Since I have reopened the public comment, is there anyone else who would like to speak? Seeing none, I will close it. We are operating according to the rules of the Brown Act. It's not, and that is by contract that we've specified that we will operate under the Brown Act. Okay, so we were thinking about taking a position of advocating that the PUC do hold a workshop, and we can either do that as a governance committee or as the individual entities that we represent.
I'd rather just do it here and get on with it.
Okay.
Save us some time.
Yeah.
And I agree with your points as well.
Yep.
Okay. Is there general agreement? So we will, because as the chair of the governance committee, I'll send a letter to the administrative law judge, and I'll work with Don to do that the correct procedural way. Okay.
That will be an ex parte communication. So
That's why I'm working with Don. So. Exactly. Okay. We will move on to five, which is discuss and provide direction engaging with the waste management district concerning procurement of power as described in category B4 of the governance agreement. The Water Authority TAC did, I believe it was the TAC or maybe it was the full board, did have a presentation from William Mary regarding some options for power procurement, and they are quite interested in engaging in conversation.
And our lead has a handout.
Perfect, okay. And you know what? I am realizing that there is a typo in the agenda. It should say category A4. And that's probably my mistake. I apologize. But so category A4 is read, subsequent to the issuance of the CPCN, governance committee may issue decisions concerning procurement of alternative non-PG&E energy supplies, so long as it lowers the unit cost of power. So the decision would not be right today, but William Mary did say, given his planning process at the Waste Management District, that engaging early with his entity and his board would be helpful to this project. So, Bob, do you want to describe the handout that Arlene has passed out?
I'd love to, but I've seen it for the very first time.
Oh, okay.
Honestly, much appreciated.
Okay.
However, do we have Larry who might be able to?
Rich can do it.
Well, Rich. Okay, Rich.
And so this is a PG&E Pacific Gas Electric tariff sheet. Just like us, they're a regulated utility, so they have tariffs. Those are the rules they run by. And this is their rate schedule for an E20 tariff, which is basically the power that we would be needing at the desal plant. For some of the other facilities that we would have as part of this project, we would be using a different tariff structure because this is based on the premise that you have over 1,000 kilowatts of demand. Our desal plant will be in the 5,000 to 6,000 kilowatt range. Okay, so this is the tariff sheet. This basically comes off their website. It's their standard sheet. And what we found out when we talked to PG&E, they have a lot of different surcharges, a lot of different pieces and taxes that are all part of the model, and this represents kind of the average of all those. What we did for our application, we actually got them to build a custom model for us, and so that's what we report on. So our numbers are actually a little bit lower than these, which is good, but they're really close. But anyway, under E20, there's three types of power supply that they give to you. There's E20 secondary firm, E20 primary firm, and E20 transmission firm. And what that really means is E20, the secondary and primary, it's basically you're taking distribution voltage in the system, which is what you have on your street, 13,000 volts. You knock it down to the feet of your plant. And the difference between secondary and primary is there's a reliability factor in there. So secondary, you may have a power blink or a power outage so many hours every year. Primary, a little bit higher standard.
So it's not referring to the specific lines on the poles, secondary Correct. And primary?
Correct. It's okay. A difference, more of a reliability
okay.
Item. And you have to pay different things to get them. So a lot of times on the secondary, they're giving you everything. On the primary, I may pay for the transformer.
and that can lower their rate. E20 transmission, which is the lowest rate, means that I have to take transmission voltage power to my plant site. So, for instance, that could be 69,000 volts. Right now, the nearest transmission main to our desal plant site is about 3 miles away. Okay, so one of the things we plan on working on with the governance committee is let's build a model of what's the best combination to get the PG&E tariff as low as possible. Do we build transmission to them? Do they do it for us? Is there a different fee arrangement? We'll work all those details out. Because there is a makeup where it may make sense to invest a little bit of capital to get to the transmission if you know, that delta in power cost, which is about 2 cents kilowatt hour, can, you know, help pay for that extra transmission main. But this is what this is, so it's just the different services they provide, and these are standard rates. Other thing, they do have a different summer rate and a different winter rate. So you'll see that, and so at the very end, the very last column is their average. Our plant's going to be running pretty much about the same all year long, just because of how we're running it. We're basically in the wintertime, we're going to be running at a high level, we're going to be banking water to the ground in the ASR system, and in the summertime, we'll be pulling it back out to meet the higher demands that we typically have in the summer. So for us, there's really no advantage to run it more in the winter and save a little bit on the power, just because the way this thing is sized, it's going to be always running. And if we go with a smaller plant, because of groundwater replenishment coming online, the plant still runs pretty much at that same kind of high level all year long.
So that is to say the final column, that average is a reasonable estimate as to what the power would actually cost.
Right. Now, one of the reasons why we're different, our numbers are a little bit different than these, is there's a demand factor that they put on there. And so the demand is, it's when you need the power too, it's not just how much. And so they look at, we gave them our typical demand curve. And so they were able to play with that, and our demand curve is positive, so it helps bring the cost down a little bit. I think our number was 0.089, so it's a little bit, you know, 0.094, it's what, 0.05 of a cent different.
Adds up.
Yeah.
Does that add up? Yeah, can add up.
So that's what.
Okay, sure. Thank you, Rich, for that. And I think that the basic question for the governance committee is if we do want to formally reach out to the waste management district, and Sue is a board member of that district. I don't know if Sue, not to put you on the spot, but is there anything you want to add in terms of what the district is looking at?
Well, they're looking at an investment of $20 to $22 million, depending on what size plant they would build. So obviously it impacts the district's budget. But on the other hand, you know, it's producing some jobs for people in the area, and you know, we'll see, you know, what we come up with. It's, you know, it's right at the beginning stages as far as the talking at the board level.
So maybe we should set them a letter of interest to them?
I think that probably, I think it would probably help their process,
yeah,
to know, formally that we are interested and we're in, and here's the sort of timeline we can, as for the governance agreement, we wouldn't be making this decision until after the issuance of the CPCN, so we can give them a sense of what that general time frame would be.
They're in the price range projected that Rich just mentioned, you know, somewhere around 9 cents or 8 cents, depending.
Let's see, Janet and then Bill.
My understanding, and maybe it's limited, is that you may not be able to get energy for a much lower rate than you would through PG&E, and that the real benefit is for greenhouse gas emission reductions. So, you know, given the fact that there may not be that large a difference between purchasing from PG&E and from the district, you're considering this under the energy issue, not necessarily the greenhouse gas emission issue, and I just would like to note that.
That's fair. The document does, in terms of the governance agreement, does speak to lowering the estimated unit cost of, or price of power. I think there may be other benefits
above and beyond just the price of power.
I'm just suggesting that it might not lower the cost of power. By the time that they have to buy into the PG&E power structure, you know, sometimes the cost differential isn't that significant. That's all I'm suggesting.
Bill.
At his presentation to the authority TAC, William Mary, mentioned that right now they wholesale power back out to PG&E at about 8.5 cents. So Mr. Brennan's comment is actually right on point, or really very close. That's the price that they would be looking to the project to pay for their investment in the gas generated. Landfill gas is about 50-50. Methane and carbon dioxide. So for their investment in the infrastructure to generate power, they were looking at wholesaling it to the project at about the same price they wholesale it to PG&E. And then parenthetically he added they make about a penny on the average. Some months they don't make any if they're, you know, their capital repair and replacements turn out to be a little higher. In some months they'll make a couple of pennies, but on average they make about a penny on at 8.5 cents wholesaling it to PG&E.
And 8.5 cents is just barely below the number that Rich quoted, 8.9 cents. Okay, other comments on this item? Seeing none, we will close the public comment period, and there's a suggestion that we send a letter of interest to the district and maybe ask them to come to a subsequent meeting of the governance committee to work through details.
Be great.
Okay. Without objection, we will do that. We'll move on to item 6, which is review matters subject to governance committee action in the agreement and develop a working calendar for agenda items. This being our first meeting and the governance committee agreement being ink is still drying on those signatures, we wanted to at least get a general sense of calendar of when certain decisions will be coming to the governance committee so that we can work as we choose to as individual representatives to work with our respective entities, in my case the Water Authority and the Water Authority's Technical Advisory Committee to make sure that we're coming prepared to make informed decisions as they are needed by Cal-Am on this project. So, I don't know, Rob, if you want to take a first shot at this.
There's two items that I'm aware of that are imminent. One we've already talked about, and that's the RFQ for the design builder. So I believe, Anthony, we'll issue the formal notification of this consultative process that we have to go through Friday. Is that your intent?
Friday.
So Friday we will formally send this note to the governance committee that says we're ready for the committee to decide on the RFQ. I believe that we'll accompany with that letter or soon thereafter the draft RFQ. So given our next meeting is it next Wednesday?
Yeah, week from today.
Week from today. So we want to make sure that you folks have enough time to review the draft RFQ in advance of that meeting. So we've talked a lot about that, but that'll be coming for the next meeting. The second thing that that we would like to put on the agenda for the next meeting is the issue of the architecture of the facility. And the reason we want to have that started now is we decided some time ago to engage Cal Poly, and we've been working with Cal Poly. For those that don't know, they have one of the best architectural programs in the United States, and so we picked them for that specific reason. But we are working through a process with them where a group of students will be coming up with some conceptual designs for the architecture of the facility. And this is an area it's an A1, I think it's more of a community decision than it will be a Cal-Am decision, given we can keep the price in the realm of the construction estimates. And so I think at the next meeting we'll come to you with the schedule that our folks have worked through with Cal Poly It's, you know, these folks are in classes, and so they have a pretty regimented schedule of when they have to achieve the various milestones. And we want to talk with you about that. And it could be that the best fit for us would be to have, whether it's this committee or some assignee from this committee, agree to participate in the process. They do have a number of meetings. Some of them will be here, some of them will be down at Cal Poly, and they'll need input from collectively from us along the way. And so that process is really just getting kicked off. I think April 3rd, we're intending that the students would be up here to see the desal plant site, to see, to meet with stakeholders and to start the kickoff, really, of their work. So that's happening, and we'll want to get into more detail on that at the next meeting.
That'll be interesting. Yeah. I've seen that process before, but it'd be interesting.
And can I add a little bit? So the idea here is that there could be as many as 5 student groups that would whittle down, and then at the end there could be, you know, 1 or 2 concepts that are selected that we would then fold into the RFP for the design builders, so they would have a target point to start pricing what it looks like. And so if we get, you know, everyone here to kind of agree the concepts, then we'll have a nice firm price. That way we're not changing architectural features after we already have a price, and that's a lot harder to do. And their schedule, they'll have a final product for us in August, which is during the procurement of the RFP. So it works out well from that time as well.
So the RFP is issued June 15th, but you'll give a number of months for firms to respond.
Yes.
So in August,
the due date is September 15th.
Okay.
For the RFP. It's a big RFP, so they need lots of months. And so in the middle of that, we would inject.
So we would have input into the design criteria. That would be what we were looking at as steps as to, you know, what the public view impacts are going to be, what tones it should have, you know, what massing issues should take place without, you know, obviously getting into the mechanical operations of the facility.
And how are we planning to go to the public to get input?
I think that's for us to decide or return to our respective, bodies and to engage them in that as well.
That probably would be the best, is each of us take back to our groups and then form some subgroups so we get some input with respect to what it should look like.
Yeah, that might be tricky because my experience with, at least with water plant architectural design, is oftentimes you want to actually hear from the designer. You want, and the architect, you want them to articulate that to you and show you their renderings and explain what their thinking was behind that. My experience is it's much more powerful to see it from the artist himself, so to speak, than for others to relay it on to different groups. So it might be that the best thing to do would be to have them show their work when they're at that point, and through the process to a group of folks that can provide input along the way. And then ultimately, it'll be a beauty contest, so to speak. There'll be the final products that will be there, and somebody will have to pick. And the intent, I think, was this committee would make that selection.
I say this as somebody who made a misstep 26 years ago and got on the Architecture Review Committee, the City of Monterey. And at that time, we always said, you know, design by committee is where sea serpents come from. And frankly, you know, you're better off to have something to use as a start point and critique than you are to say, well, here's, you know, 20 different people participating in a discussion about what design should be, because, you know, my floor may well be your roof. It's just a matter of perception. It's like, I know what art is when I see it, but I don't really know how to describe it. So probably be a good idea. I mean, I agree with you that it'd be better to, we can have some areas of concern that we would put out there, as I said earlier, but to get down to the nitty gritty of it might be a real mistake and hinder some creativity too.
I guess I want to make sure I understand what Bob was suggesting. What I interpreted is that it may be that there is another mayor on the Water Authority that is particularly interested or has particular expertise and in going and meeting and hearing directly from the artists themselves, you know, Rob. In which case, I'd be perfectly happy to...
Well, my alternate is an architect.
Well, there you go. Right.
And she's here. Make a
yeah, please.
And part of Cal Poly's forte, of course, is design and buildability. And I think when you do this, because it's so easy for, and I've worked with a lot of students down there, it's so easy to sort of do the ultimate design, but without a real consideration of cost and building. So you might want to include not only the design students, but the engineers. And that does produce a fairly good product down there. But do lay out that criteria. It's not only design, it's design, cost, and buildability.
Yeah, great.
And we've thrown in the sustainable design functions and features as well, because we are interested in some of the ideas.
Right,
that come
and
out
of course, I have made the statement many times on LEED. I think you want to stay with sustainable design, but I think for the cost of the paperwork for LEED, it's not worth what you could have put into the building.
Sure.
Since it's county property, you might want somebody informally from the county planning so that that factors into what Cal Poly is doing.
Yeah. And Bill.
Yeah, capitalizing on what Supervisor Prado was saying, that you know, buildings are designed from the inside out. So you think about what's going on inside as part of this overall, you know, the mechanical systems for what really count, what we're buying into. And very pleased that Mayor Byrne can talk about, the aesthetics of this thing. And but I still remember when Supervisor Prado was on the ARC in Monterey.
I barely remember.
And I still
remember that long ago.
So that the debates on different types of architecture for things like the Sports Center. So I would point out there's a difference between Mission Architecture and Taco Bell. They are not the same. Okay? So you really need somebody with a good hand guiding that process if we're going to talk about building exteriors and those kinds of things.
This is focused entirely on what's within the fence line of the desal facility. So issues like whether a water tank in the distribution system is above ground or below ground or how it looks, that's not part of this discussion at this point.
Correct.
Okay.
Bill's analogy with Sports Center is an interesting one, because the argument for bad design in that was the fact that it was a gymnasium. The argument for architectural consideration was the fact that it was in the heart of an urbanized area and had to be aesthetically compatible with the surrounding area. If this were in the critical view shed, versus subterranean or something, but it does have a very heavy industrial use, but it can't look like an oil refinery sitting next to the highway. So yeah. It's the same challenge, frankly, because you are in the public view shed on a fairly pristine piece of Highway 1.
And will it be, I forget the topography specific to that site, but it will be potentially seen from Highway 1?
You can't really see from Highway 1 well, because Charlie Benson Road is lined with those trees. But you can see it if you're coming either east or west on 150, is that 156? So if you know where to look, when you're coming down, right, when they get past Castroville, if you look to the south, you can see where the mercantile building is, you can see the landfill stuff up there, and yeah, you'll see, you can see that plot of land. But that's several miles, that's like 3 miles away, so you're not going to see great detail, but you will see, and that's really the only place you can see it. Yeah.
Okay, any other comments on this item? How do we want to proceed? There is a couple different ideas.
So at the next meeting, we'll come forward with some real the schedule. If I could dispatch a homework assignment, I'd say we all need to think about how can we collectively provide them the right guidance. I mean, everybody wants to build the Bilbao Museum in Spain if you're an architect, and you know how much that stuff costs. We probably don't want that here. We want a nice-looking water plant-type structure that fits in, is respectable, and all those things. And so we have to figure out how to frame that and give them that guidance. And you know, it's a process you have to go through. So so we need to think about how can we give them that guidance, because if it's like designing your own kitchen, if you don't give them, if you're designing your kitchen and you don't, you know, give input along the way, you won't be happy with the end product. And so we have to, I think, come to grips with, well, what do we want? Do we want it to, you know, do we want it to be low profile structure? Do we want it to blend in with the native surroundings? Do we, all of these things that you generally do when you're thinking about the concepts have to be thought through.
I realize I haven't done as good a job as chair as I should in terms of focusing the conversation. This specific item is not on the agenda. We're just going through identifying what decisions are coming up, and so we probably shouldn't get into
that. Yeah, just agree we'll schedule.
Yeah, we'll just focus on scheduling. But
you bring forward.
But we will add it to the next week's schedule, and we can talk about it in detail at that point. Are there other items that you want to make sure are on our radar and on our calendars?
I have one more. So we are, for the slant test well, there is, design is currently underway. We will be going out to do procurement of that item, and it's a $3 million item. So those documents we would need to be coming to you to, you know, show you how that all looks. And so just to put it in rough timetable, it'd be July, August at latest is when we need to have a final document ready.
And that would be an RFP.
Right, there's no RFQ for that. It's going to be an RFP. It's going to be the proposal to the company that will install the slant test well.
Okay. Before we go to, I just want to make sure, are there any other items that within the purview of the governance committee that you want to make sure we are beginning to calendar?
The only other one that I think we should consider is this B4 item, is the concept of community outreach. And so I just raise it that's an item that could start at any time. Doesn't have to start immediately, but I just raise it that we perhaps should think about when we want to formally discuss that item.
If I may, just for the record, the issue we were talking about, the aesthetics, I think would fall under a B5 category as opposed to the A3 aesthetics issue.
Right.
I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
Yeah, right. Got that.
For the outreach, when we had the advisory committee, we actually vetted a whole series of companies who might do the outreach, but you also talked about the PUC doing, so I'm not quite clear right now if you're passing outreach and workshops to the PUC or you think we should do some as well. I mean, we do that. And then the second thing is going back to the homework assignment that Rob has given everyone. Before you do that, it would sure be helpful to have maybe a photograph of the site, some idea of topographical changes, and how many square feet at minimum you need, and whether it could be one. I mean, there's some things that, you know, the whole room here probably has different ideas on. If you could give those factual guidelines out, it might make more sense next week when we talk about it.
Okay. Yeah, that's good feedback.
Yep. I think in terms of the community outreach, we are going to ask the PUC on one specific issue, which is to request that they host a workshop to develop the criteria for the GWR recommendation. Mm-hmm. But I haven't heard other elements that we'd want to push to the PUC. I think, to the contrary, they're up in San Francisco, and we want to have things that are down here more accessible to the community. Okay, so we have four items. Two of which need to be on next week's agenda, and the other two we can work through on a longer time frame. Other suggestions of for matters subject to the governance committee that we need to begin calendaring. Yeah, Larry.
Just
You know, this Friday there's going to be an all-day meeting of all the consultants and agencies involved with groundwater replenishment, and it's going to try to flesh out technical, CEQA, you know, a lot of different things. Perhaps you want to consider having an update on the groundwater replenishment project, like as a sort of a standard item?
It's not covered by the governance committee. The governance committee is focused on the desal facility. The water authority, and I presume the water management district, I wouldn't speak for them, the water authority certainly is interested, and we are advocating the GWR project, and so we will be having that on our agendas. I think that tomorrow we don't have it on our agenda because Dave Stolt was not available and we wanted to have him available, but it will be on the 28th. We're going to have a discussion on GWR. So I think that's the right venue.
Right.
It's not within the governance committee agreement.
But as somebody who won't be at that meeting for a while,
maybe we'll get you there eventually.
I'm just waiting on the AG. I guess the report backs to the board on what's going, that is kind of filtered by who's reporting and who's got the personal opinion, if you understand where I'm going with that. So I don't get 100%, you know, impartial opinion on what's going on at that meeting. We should be getting updates, so at the district. I'll get those, and yeah, that'd be all right.
Okay. Other suggestions for future agenda items or things to begin calendaring? Seeing none, we will take those four suggestions and add the first two on next week's agenda. Turn to 7, which is complete the party distribution list for future meeting notices. I know there's been some discussion about making sure that all the right parties are receive the notice for these meetings. But I don't know if Don...
It would be helpful if someone could actually send a note to us with your contact information so that we can actually put you on a list, so make sure that you actually get notice in a timely fashion. It would be helpful if people could do that. And that's good normally for a year, so you'd have to renew it. But if you would just do that, that would be very helpful. And that's in addition to the ones that we already know about. If you think that we may know about you, it's still nice to send something to us so we make sure that we don't inadvertently leave you off.
There is a.
Where do we send it?
You can send it to.
To me.
Right.
To Arlene at npwmd.net.
There was a suggestion that came in that we send the notices to all the interveners. I don't know whether that's a good idea, but that was suggested this morning by an individual.
We certainly can do that, but I'm just saying that there may be other people that are interested, and all I'm saying is the way to actually officially get on the list is to actually send us something so that we can actually record it. And we have, in that way, if you send it to us, we can send it out exactly the way you've asked us to send it.
I have a feeling, since the newspapers were here today, that more people will be interested tomorrow.
They may be.
Any other comments on that? I think that one of the purposes of the governance committee is to provide transparency locally for these decisions, and so making sure that we are fulfilling that by making sure that we're inviting the right people. I'll make an announcement at tomorrow's Water Authority meeting, or maybe ask Don to make a similar announcement to what he made today, so that anyone who is there will also know that they can get notices of these meetings. George?
I just wanted to suggest that using the mayor's JPA mailing list as a starting point. You already have that, and a lot of people have gotten on it over the months, so that at least is a best start. Plus interveners, I think.
Sure, we're going to try and get the widest distribution we can. I just want to make sure that we don't miss somebody inadvertently, or we have double check that we have the right contact information. So if people want to send us something, we absolutely make sure that we're
okay. And I think, George, we can, I'm not sure whether it happened, I encourage Leslie to send out a note to the list, but there's a lot going on, and so I don't know whether that has happened, but we can certainly send out an opt-in email saying if you'd like to
be added to this, the governance committee list, please let us know.
Okay, any other comments on this item? Seeing none, we will bring it back. Anything else? I think we just wanted it as a placeholder just so we could make that announcement and make sure that we're building that list over time. Item 8 is discussion of range and or breadth of future governance committee meeting notification. I'm not sure how that's different from 7.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah. Without objection, we'll merge those two and consider 8 also completed. And 9, I think, is pretty straightforward. We have a meeting already scheduled for next Wednesday, the 20th, at 4 p.m., if my calendar serves me. Arlene, is that correct?
The 20th, yes. 4 o'clock.
Okay. Anything else before we...
Will all the meetings be here? Is that our intention at the moment?
I think unless there's a reason to move, either because of the Water Management District, if the space isn't available, I'm sure that you can find another.
No, it's fine. It's convenient for everybody.
It's great. And under the Governance Committee, the Water Management District does have the official role of playing the role that Arlene is. Thank you very much, Arlene, for taking this on.
Are you going to try to meet every Wednesday?
No. No. The only reason that we are meeting 2 weeks in a row is, you know, this is the first, today's the first meeting, so there's just some business that we have to get done, and we have this RFQ decision that needs to be made by April 1st, so that's the reason for 2 meetings. I think that the general expectation, I think, in fact, there's some discussion. Anthony, do you remember the discussion as to the frequency of meetings?
I believe it's monthly.
But certainly if we need, if there's a lot of decisions that need to be made and we need to meet more often, that's fine. And it's also, I doubt that there'd be objections if we need to cancel a meeting because there's not work to be done in a particular month. But for now, we will work on scheduling monthly meetings, and the next meeting again is on the 20th at 4 p.m. in this room.
Very good.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.